back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are keeping calm, staying local. Don Moeller is here, former Baltimore County Executive. We're usually grabbing guests and talking to influential people and movers and shakers. We'll be doing plenty of that here on Baltimore Positive this week. Don, I don't know if you saw the new logo that I put up. I've sort of morphed the Baltimore Sports and the Baltimore Positive. It's kind of all streaming together now. There are no sports. There will be no sports for the foreseeable future. I can't imagine. I mean, even if the Orioles got to playing at some point on the 4th of July, we're going to have an NFL draft. But we've moved our programming around here pretty deftly from sports to Baltimore and local and how we can help each other. And I know you got a lot going on. I mean, you're writing a blog right now. You are departed from your children, your grandchildren. You're sequestered with your wife, right?
Grandparent withdrawal. There's no doubt about it.
Well, we've all been sort of stuck in a little bit. And how are you? How are you holding up? You and I haven't been together in 3 weeks, right?
Well, you know, we say this is extrovert hell, right? I mean, we've talked about that before, and my daughter regularly jokes that for folks like me, this is double whammy. But you know what, Nestor, that's a mild price to pay. We will get through this. It's, you know, when you look at what's going on, it's amazing. I just realized that we are about 1 month out, from the first death in the United States. It's just, you know, the month and what has happened in that month, just so unprecedented. And I saw this morning that we're now at a point, you know, we've got more people who have died in the United States from coronavirus in that month than have died in all the war, you know, in the wars. I mean, in September 11th, we lost 2,900 people, Afghanistan, 2,300. I mean, this is the number of people who are just really being affected, and the families being affected by this pandemic, just really pretty horrific. And you know, the latest projections are that we're still going to lose several hundred thousand people, as the docs pointed out. Had we done nothing, you know, it might have been 1 or 2 million people. And the fact that we got started late, I mean, you and I believe that there's no doubt. Had we heeded early warnings, had we approach this in a truly professional manner, what I think we should expect from our federal government, we would have been in a very different place.
Well, let me stop you right there, just, you know, because when the fools come out from over the hill in the red hats, they dispute facts. They're, you know, the part that I'm really upset about as an American, and this certainly, you know, goes on to Dianne Feinstein's desk as well, were the senators selling off stock back in January. That's treasonous, you know, and I don't like hearing that 60 days later. And I don't like that crimes, including the president's crimes in regard to the Ukraine and Hunter Biden and all the rest of that went on, have been swept under the carpet as though that doesn't matter and that's had no role in our hospitals being taxed and no role in having PPE equipment for workers and for doctors and nurses. And I know how important your grandchild's life is to you, how important my wife's life is to me, how many doctors' masks you've seen in your grandson's life, how many surgical equipment, pieces of equipment that have been used, and safety precautions to make sure no infection happens for anyone involved. And I went through gloves and hundreds of masks during my wife's illness. You know, I can still smell the coffee in my mask every morning for 155 days on my breath as I needed to do that to keep her alive. To have a president that is so callous, so shallow, so unscientific, so foolish, and so mean and degrading on a nightly basis, to talk about doctors and nurses stealing equipment, I mean, at some point, you want to slap him across the face and say, snap out of it, dude, snap out of it. What are you talking about? You're the leader of the free world, man.
Well, it's you and I get from, and I follow your Facebook feed, Nestor, and you and I get a fair amount of pushback from what I call the cult of Trump, and they'll say, well, why can't you guys just give the president credit. Why can't you back off? Why do you always have to be difficult on the president? What I always point out is that for us, it's not partisan whatsoever. And I think we have been glowing in our praise of the work that, that Governor Hogan has done and other governors across the country. We've obviously sung the praises of our local county executives like John Ossieski Jr., Calvin Ball, and Stuart Pittman, and Barry Glassman, all of whom are doing great work. It's not partisan. I think what you and I, and you always go back to that comment in the very beginning of Baltimore Positive, when you said to me, what do you expect from leaders? And I said to you, I expect a hatred of incompetence. And I think, you know, if I go back now, I think in the light of Healthy Holly, and if you talk about senators selling stock, I think I would say a hatred of incompetence and basic integrity. Basic integrity and telling the truth. So to me, again, it's not nonpartisan. Dianne Feinstein sold millions of dollars worth of stocks after a confidential briefing that the pandemic was coming.
She should go to jail.
She should resign, and the authorities should do whatever they need to do, just as they should for any Richard Burr or any Republican that was involved in it. It's not a partisan issue for me. Listen, I was in public office. I was in government for 20 years. And as you often point out, I used to get angry at you when people want to say, well, they're all like that. And I'd say, no, they're not all like that. I've worked with many, many, many elected officials alongside of many elected officials. And almost every single one of them are just outstanding public servants, whether that means whether it's Dutch or John Sarbanes, certainly Elijah when he was alive, Ben Cardin, Chris Van Hollen. These aren't people that are in it for themselves. These are people who are in it because they want to make a difference. I watch local county council representatives, like my own representative, Tom Quirk, who are working day in and day out just to make their communities better. So they're not all like that. So therefore, when people behave in a way that is outside the lines, when they're coloring outside the lines, it makes me furious. So when the president every day tries to rewrite the script saying that what we just saw the day before we did not really see, it's just incredible.
That the states of Washington and Michigan, and the state of Michigan's what put him in the chair, let's be honest, right? To say that you have a Democratic governor and I'm not going to send what you need to keep your citizens alive?
Well,
I mean, it's outrageous.
Take that point. Let's talk about the governor of Michigan and what the president said recently at a news conference where he said his words, not my words, that I told Mike Pence not to call her back. Well, then in a subsequent news conference, he berates CNN, calls them fake news, yells at the reporter saying that he never said that, and the reporter just simply says, well, Mr. President, I'm reading directly from the transcript of your words at the previous press conference, and the president says, I never said that. That's why you guys aren't real news. Now, that's mortifying. It's disgusting. But here's what worries me more about that, Nestor, and that is that this president understands this. He understands several things. He does not understand much about American history, but he does understand a few important things at this time. The American people, by their nature, want to rally around the president. And you actually wrote about this recently on Facebook. They want to rally around the president during difficult times. So during the hostage crisis, Jimmy Carter's ratings went way up. During 9/11, George W. Bush's ratings went way up. The American people want to rally around their president. This president does understand, or has people around him that understand that point. So therefore, he goes out every day in these briefings that you and I think, other than the medical folks who are there or the generals who are there giving real information, his portion of the briefings really are not substantive.
Well, they expose him for the buffoon he is. So anyone who thinks that, you know, it's a partisan thought or it's political, no, it's simply he's a buffoon. When he opens his mouth, facts are not part of the dialogue. Literally, the insults, the childishness, the boorishness, the selfishness, the lack of empathy, the lack of aspiration. He's a gross individual at the top of any organization. This would not... I mean, I recently watched the CEO of Marriott with corporate videos, and corporate videos are everywhere now. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger's making videos. John Bon Jovi's making aspirational videos. Joe Buck is doing play-by-play. Everybody's doing their thing. Donald Trump is doing what Donald Trump does, which is say stupid stuff, act like a buffoon. Everybody's a problem but him. It's what got him elected. I mean, you go back and look at these tweets from 2011, 12, 13, 14 in regard to Obama. That guy is running the free world in the middle of a pandemic when we've been stuck in our homes for 3 weeks, and we somehow normalized this, Don. This is not normal. America is shut down. There's nothing normal about this.
I think what is frustrating to many of us, certainly frustrating to you, because as people can imagine, even off the air, you call me to scream and shout because you can't believe what
you're
seeing.
Well, it's obvious he doesn't care about people. You know what I mean? That is clear to anyone who is watching this, other than if you're a WWE heel fan, to think that he's doing anything on behalf of you, your family, if your family were to be in dire medical straits, which all of us are subjected to in the next month or two or five, right? That any of us could contract this illness, and let alone what it would do to you financially, that you don't have a job to begin with right now. And that means 30% of the people listening right now, right?
Well, what was that again about the 30%?
30% unemployment right now is what we're talking about right by the end of next month, right?
Yeah, significant unemployment, I think. You know, a crisis that we hope will be over sometime in June. We don't know. I've heard recent medical folks. So here's my concern. Let me back up for a second. Let's hope that it does wind down sometime in the middle of June, or certainly hopefully by July, and we get back to somewhat normal behavior. I think it's going to take months, if not years, to truly return to what we call normal. But now, medical professionals are predicting that we may see a spike again in the fall. And what concerns me, listen, I've been very outspoken. I do not like the president's style. I do not like what I see that he does in terms of dividing Americans. It obviously appeals to a large segment of Americans. He has his highest poll ratings ever. He knows how to rally Americans around the flag. For whatever reason, they look beyond his misstatements. I try to analyze that. I haven't been able to come up with a good reason for that. Later today, I'm actually releasing, so by the time people hear this, it will be out. They can go to, I encourage them to go to donmohler.com and check out my latest blog, On the Front Porch, this and that on the front porch, because I take a historical look at how we got to a place where the partisan divide is so bad and so rancorous in the United States that we now debated for weeks whether or not a virus was even serious or a hoax or something to be taken seriously. And that didn't just happen in 2020 with Donald Trump. And what I outlined, taking a historical look at this, was go back into the 1980s when this true hyper-sized partisanship began. And it really began with a little-known congressman from Georgia named Newt Gingrich, who discovered something, and Nestor, as a broadcaster, you'll be fascinated by this. He discovered something that hardly anybody knew even existed, and it was a little thing called C-SPAN. And C-SPAN at that time was being delivered into about 20 million households in the United States. There was no MSNBC. There was no Fox News. As I point out in the blog, Roger Ailes at that time was working on the committee to reelect Ronald Reagan. Sean Hannity was painting houses, you know, out in Santa Barbara, California. So none of that existed. And Newt realized and a band of merry men of these really conservative right-wing Republicans who wanted scorched earth policy, and they no longer cared about governing. And in their sights, they put moderate Republicans that still made up a good portion of the Republican Party at that time.
Reagan Republicans is what you would call them.
Yeah. Rockefeller Republicans. But certainly the Reagan Democrats, that whole group, and put them all in their sights and went for scorched earth. And it paid dividends. So if folks are interested in a kind of historical perspective of how we got here, as I said, by the time they hear this, go to DonMulward.com. I hope you'll subscribe to the blog, you know, this and that on the front porch. Take a historical look. But you and I talked the other day where that partisan divide becomes very important and really a public health issue was a recent poll that NBC and the Wall Street Journal did together that did an analysis of where the cases of coronavirus are currently in the United States. And this is really significant, Nestor, because it showed that 80% of the cases of coronavirus in the United States are in counties that were carried by Hillary Clinton in the presidential election. Only 20% of the cases are in counties that were carried by Donald Trump. Now, what does that mean and how does that translate? That means that it may not be unreasonable for folks in those red counties to think this is simply much ado about nothing, and why are you people on the coast making such a big deal about it? Why are Democrats all worked up about it? But here's the reality, and recently Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx have both cautioned about this, and Fauci was specific in recent press conferences and saying, look, those of you in counties and areas that have low infection rates at this point, don't take that as a sign that it's not coming soon to a theater near you.
Well, it is counterintuitive, and maybe you do need to, you know, be 10th grade or, you know, on in biology or math to understand the compound math of it doubling every 2, 3, 4 days as it has, that if it comes to your hometown in Topeka or Broken Pelvis, Montana, and you don't have Johns Hopkins and you don't have the kind of hospitals that New York has, that Atlanta has, that Detroit has, that New Orleans has at this point, and those hospitals become overwhelmed, it's coming to your hometown. And to think that you're allergic from the pandemic, we go back to the idiot running the country who thought this can't come to America and didn't believe. He thought it was for Asian people running around in little white Willy Wonka suits in Wuhan, because that's what we saw 2 months ago. Well, two months ago has come here now. Now the little white suits are running around Elmhurst Hospital up in New York, and there's ambulances 24 hours a day in the biggest city on the continent, literally, right?
And they're wearing garbage bags as hospital gear. You know, and it's interesting, our good friend Alina Nguyen, who would be with us, except she's getting ready to have a baby here any day now. Actually, by the time this
safely,
she may be a new mom again. But, you know, I've heard her recently say that there are three things that we're still not taking seriously or getting right. And she broke it down. It was so crystal clear. One she said was, give the healthcare workers what they need. Clearly, we still don't have enough masks. We still don't have enough ventilators. We still don't have enough gowns. So rather than look back and relitigate how we got here and whether or not the president and his team should have been preparing for this months in advance. Of course they should have. But at this point, let's turn the dial. Let's look forward. And someone recently suggested that the president would be well served in taking a former general, an expert in logistics, and having a logistics czar to have the United States government truly become the purchasing agent for all of this equipment. Now, the president has resisted that, but as Dr. Nguyen points out, that would be a concrete step that we could take now. And Nestor, I would suggest one that we need to take as we prepare and look forward to the fall, when this thing may double back and hit us again. The second is that we still do not have the data that we need because we still lag way, way behind in testing. And the president can make light of that all he wants, but the reality is we still can't target the disease or identify the curve because we still don't have the massive testing that we need. And her third point was very crystal clear, is that we need everyone in the nation to embrace serious social distancing. I mean, Nestor, you probably read recently there was a story here in Maryland where police twice now have been called to a home in Carroll County for a big party where they finally had to arrest a person because he was refusing to acknowledge or pay attention or take seriously this concept of social distancing and was actually thumbing his nose at the authorities saying, you can't make me stop partying. Well, this is where, and again, our critics are going to come through the radio right now. They're going to come, you know, they're going to be angry at us again. But this is where the president did and Fox News did irreparable damage early on because they spoke to that base and they told them it was a hoax, that it was just Democrats trying to embarrass the president. And the president started at the initial press conference. We only have 15 people. It will probably be down to 5 by the end of the week. And come April, it's just going to wash away. Now, folks, if you're listening, those aren't my words. Those are the president's words. So, I mean, a lot of damage has been done. But, you know, you and I are out there. Let's talk about some of the good things. And first of all, it's always, always acknowledge our sponsors. State Fair, the job that Evan Brown and Keith Holsey are doing to keep State Fair open.
By the way, I texted with him the other night. We're trying to make his kind of fried chicken in our kitchen. I mean, we did a nice job, but I need to get his recipe. I told him that.
I told Jen, I private messaged Jen yesterday. I said, my mother was the queen, and she's still holding fried chicken feet in heaven up above. I told Jen that you and I will have a private conversation, and you will make the greatest fried chicken.
What's the secret? Okay, give me the secret right now. What am I doing wrong?
First of all, buttermilk is the secret.
Okay, fair enough.
And a cast iron frying pan. You cannot make fried chicken in anything but a cast iron frying pan. It'll get close, but it won't be the fried chicken that you know and love.
Why is that? Is that heat?
Now you're probably getting into the chemistry, but I can guarantee you, as someone who...
Why? I ask questions. I ask why. I've been asking you why since you were my guidance counselor in 1982.
But I can guarantee you that it's the cast iron frying pan.
You can't come on and just make a pronouncement like that without having some sort of science to back it up. What are you? Your name's Mohler. It's not Trump, for crying out loud.
A lot of your listeners who grew up with moms and grandmoms will tell you cast iron frying pan. And then the oil has to be very, very hot. And then it's a mixture of egg and the buttermilk and the flour. And then season the chicken ahead of time. That's the other thing that people don't understand. You have to season the chicken before you put it in the buttermilk and the eggs and the flour. You have to season it ahead of time. And then as soon as you take it out of the pan, then you have to salt it again. And I'm telling you, it may not be State Fair chicken and waffle, but it'll be my mom.
It says right here on the internet, fried chicken is delicious and easy to make in a cast iron skillet. Iron skillets are especially good for frying chicken. I don't know why, but it doesn't say why.
I didn't know. Because my
this sounds like some southern thing my mother made up.
Exactly. My grandmother was from Richmond. She passed it down to my mother, and it's a cast iron frying pan. So thank you, Evan and Keith at State Fair. Please call them. They're open brunch, lunch, dinner, incredible food. Our good friends at Fadley, Stanley Hahn, Bill and Nancy Devine, we absolutely love them. They are shut down in the market right now, but their crab cakes, Nestor, are still available. You know you want a crab cake while you're locked in your house. They'll ship them directly to your door. Go on the Fadley site, on the website, click on the shop button, and get their crab cakes. And then our friends at Center Maryland, who are doing an incredible job trying to put all the news together for you every morning, centermaryland.org. And then our latest sponsor, Jeff Mohler and Mohler and Gary Realty. Jeff's working hard the business is continuing to move forward. You can get Jeff at 410-746-1547. And it was interesting because Jeff does a lot of work with a good friend of yours of mine, David Thurston, at Crown Title. And I noticed today that Crown Title has brought in a bunch of picnic tables, and they're having folks, when they want to do settlements, sit outside in the car, call inside, then someone comes out, you social distance at the picnic table, and your settlement proceeds. So, you know, support our sponsors. They're doing great things. And then, Ness, we're talking about great things. The work that our good buddy Tim Bojanowski at Zest Media Solutions is doing with TogetherBaltimoreCounty.org. Just amazing. And again, if you're listening at home or in your car, you know, when you get a chance, don't write while you're in your car, but make a note, TogetherBaltimoreCounty.org. The first of their pop-up markets begins this weekend. Just amazing work that they're doing.
All right. I'm trying to still figure this out, whether this is – I mean, there's a lot of things about cast iron skillets, but I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Don, I got time on my hands, all right? I mean, so
– I'm telling you, the oil has to be incredibly hot before you put the chicken
in. I told
in.
Jen I'm going to Royal Farms. It was too much work. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to Royal Farms for chicken. That's what I'm going to do.
Listen, I love Rofo. I'm a big fan of Royal Farms. I particularly like their chicken tenders. But I'm telling you, there is nothing like homemade fried chicken the Gene Moeller way.
All right, buttermilk. I got it. Buttermilk. All right.
Buttermilk. And seasoning the chicken before you dip it in the buttermilk and egg mixture. Now, we're going to get all kinds of folks. I hope they will jump on your Facebook page, my Facebook page. Give us your favorite fried chicken recipes. But let's talk a little bit about this Baltimore County Together, Nestor, because when we had Tim on, and again, I encourage folks to go back to Baltimore Positive and listen to the episodes that we did with Tim Bojanowski talking about this whole idea of food security. And sure enough, here the private sector steps up working with Keeney Craters. And there's a whole website, again, BaltimoreCountyTogether.org. You can go on. You can register. The pop-up markets are going to begin the first weekend in April. And what's really clever about it, I think, Nestor, as I'm looking at it, is that they're managing the markets to maintain social distancing so that you have to go on and register, and then you find out which market in your area you're being directed to and what time you can come to pick up your box of produce. So,
well, I told you the farmer's market's one of the biggest parts of our life. It, you know, it's something that's on our calendar every Sunday morning. Kiefer Mitchell pouring me some orange juice. And, you know, I go around, I get some donuts, I get some snacks. We get our lettuce, we get our tomatoes, our heirlooms, all of our fresh vegetables, my summer corn, you know, my berries, all of that. We're trying to figure all of that out. In addition to, you know, I'm going to run out and see my friend Rob Santoni at Wise Markets. And, you know, I go to the supermarket, pick stuff up as well. But these local markets and where the food's coming from, I mean, I know we had Tim on last week. This is such an important thing over the next 90 days, right?
And for just $20, folks can go in and get 15 pounds, Nestor, of fresh produce. Just think about that.
Wow.
I mean, these are the inspirational stories. That's what I said out of this. I mean, there is so much that can get us down at this time. But when I see a group like this and the partnership and the private sector working with government and folks are simply at an assigned time are going to go and pick up 15 pounds of produce for $20, and in Baltimore County, and these will be popping up throughout other counties, in Baltimore County, there'll be the top-up markets in all seven councilmanic districts. So, again, Tim Bojanowski, the folks at Zest Media Solutions, Keeney Produce, all of the partnerships, I can't thank them enough. So I think there are great things happening. And hey, Nestor, before we get out of here and move on to other things, I don't know if you saw recently, it took me back to why you started Baltimore Positive, and you've been predicting this for a while now, but it's gotten lost in the past week amidst all the coronavirus information, and that is the news story that the Baltimore City population has dipped below 600,000 for the first time in 100 years. Now down into the, you know, it's really alarming. It has tremendous implications for the city.
Well, for the tax base as well.
For its representation. I mean, this is a, you know, it's been trending downwards. It had a little bit of a spike during the administration of Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake. It actually got up in 2014 to 623,000. But these recent estimates are truly alarming. And, you know, going back to 2015, and you've talked about it, after the arrest of Freddie Gray and the ongoing crime problems, I mean, it's now, it's pretty significant. I mean, since 2010, the city's lost almost, you know, has lost more than 27,000 residents. That's 4% of the population, Master, just since 2010.
We got to make it better, and that's why we got together here. Don Moeller is here. We're going to keep calm. We're going to stay local. We've got more Baltimore Positive ahead for you all week long. All of my conversations this week, I'm going to be talking to a lot of our sponsors, a lot of people doing great stuff. I'm going to have Bill Paco on from the Green Turtle later on this week, talking about things going on at Fells Point. We had Ron Furman on. We're getting all around the Beltway, all around Baltimore. Don, hang in there, man. I know it's hard being away from the kids and the grandkids and, you know, sort of being sequestered and a slave to the Wi-Fi and the next Larry Hogan press conference, but we are learning a lot about ourselves. I think we're learning a lot about leadership, and really, I think on a spiritual level, and we're learning what's important to us and what we miss the most, and what's going to be the most important thing when all this is over with, right?
No doubt about it. You and I are committed throughout this. We're going to continue to have important conversations in the near future. We're going to be talking to the school superintendents of Baltimore City and Baltimore County, trying to get the latest from them, give folks an update. We're going to bring on a school principal, one that I know quite well, but I've been fascinated at the work that school principals are doing. So we're going to bring on Dr. Jennifer Lynch. She's going to talk to us about what it means in real terms, on the ground for her teachers, for her students. So,
well, you're an education guy, and like having school taken away in the middle of March, this is all you've known 50 years of your life as an educator, right? Like this is a different type of experiment, and it's literally an experiment. I don't know that anybody's really thought about doing it this way until we were forced into it 2 or 3 weeks ago, right?
Well, it's a real experiment, and what I want to chat with the superintendents about when we have them on, one of the things I want to talk to them about is a real concern I think that people are raising about the equity of the situation. It's certainly not a level playing field when you talk about what devices and what access to internet and what skills parents have across the region and what we do to deal with those equity issues. So, as you said, we're going to continue to learn. We're going to continue to keep people connected. We remind folks, not that very soon they're going to be receiving, if you live in the 7th, Congressional District, you're going to be receiving a ballot by mail for that 7th Congressional District election. And then we really will start to look to June 2nd and the primary election that's going to be conducted totally by mail. And the next time I think you and I chat, we'll talk a little bit about the concerns that some of the transparency advocates have for that, particularly members of the disabled community and the blind community, about how difficult voting by mail, how that's a challenge for folks who have certain disabilities, certainly the blind and others, that's being raised right now. So vote by mail is not as easy as people think. It's not just simply dropping something in a mailbox and that takes care of it all. So there are a lot of issues. We're going to get through this. We're going to come out on the other side. We hope we see that curve bend down in the near future. And at Baltimore Positive, we're going to try to keep people connected as we go forward.
Don Moeller joining us here. You can find him out on the porch. You can find him at BaltimorePositive.com. And, of course, he's also out on the Facebook and the Twitter thing as well, opining about all things pandemic, government, holding it together, the education, the situation we have here in Baltimore. We're hanging in. We're staying calm. We're staying local. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST. And always staying Baltimore positive.